The following may contain NSFW content and is intended for mature audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
In a world of sorry-ass social justice warriors,
politically correct panty waists,
and really fake news, there still exists brash, bold dudes with balls who tell it like it really is, really was, and really should be. This is the honest, raw, real Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Jones is a 40-something transcendental meditating hockey-playing vegan who's living the bachelor dream in the heart of the city. Mike's a 40-something beer-swilling suburban married father of four who's traded in motorcycles and marathons for a minivan. They say the things real dudes think, and real women want to hear them say. No topics taboo. Nothing's off limits. No holds are barred. About everything from women to pop culture, millennials to race, news, views, family, money, and more. This is the Dude Say when they're uncensored, unfiltered, and unafraid. Join the show and say some shit too. 872-701-0999. Tweet at Jones and Mike. See and hear us at jonesandmike.com. This is shit Dude Say. Dude Say. Dude Say. On the show today, our guest is Andrew Farabee. He's written the books The Dating Playbook for Men, The Breakup Manual for Men, and The Porn Pandemic. He's also host of the Knowledge for Men podcast. He's interviewed 400 experts on life, business, and relationships. You can find him online at knowledgeformen.com. Andrew, thanks for being on Shit Dude Say. Let's just take it from the top. Start off with a baseline. Give me a definition, your definition. What is a real man?
I think a man who's on his path and purpose in life, and he's courageously going after what he wants in life to create the life that he wants.
Yeah, that's putting you on the spot. I know that was a really hard first question. And honestly, I had to come up with my own definition so that I, in case you turned the tables on me, and I didn't want to like stumble and stammer and whatever. But it is something like, yeah, what? I never really stopped and thought about it. What is a real man? You get in your mind's eye like, oh, like a burly man, a lumberjack or whatever. But, you know, what does it mean in 2017? And what does it mean to people in different geographic areas and whatnot? You're obviously somebody who's spent a lot of time thinking about this subject, talking to how many experts have you interviewed on this subject?
Yeah, it's close to 400 now in the last 3.5 years.
And what led you to do this? But tell us your thumbs, you know, sure, the thumbnail sketch on your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say about 3.5 years ago, nearly 4 years ago, I was going through a tough breakup with a girl that I thought I was going to marry. I was madly in love with. I thought that life was good. I had this job. I had this girl. I thought, you know, life was going to move forward. But that didn't happen. I ended up hating my job. I was falling into depression. The girl, we broke up. I found myself alone. I found myself addicted to alcohol, and I was smoking, and I was watching a lot of porn. I was playing a lot of video games, and I was just going to work and then coming back and doing that same thing and just going to the gym and stuff. And I just found myself asking, like, is this it? Like, I thought I did everything right in life. I thought I went to college, got good grades, was a leader, had a great girl, thought things were just going to move forward and life was going to continue to get better. But I hit a brick wall, and life, I fell into a deep depression. So I started searching for answers. I started reading books, as you can see behind me. I have hundreds of different books, and I went to events, and I started this search. I started traveling around the country trying to find out, how can I create the life that I want, become the man that I want to be, get the relationships that I want to be in, and get the health that I want to have, and just create the life that I wanted. And on that journey, I found some answers, and I've applied them into my own life. And for a period of time, I was, you know, in debt, maxed out multiple credit cards. I was broke. I couldn't talk to a girl for the life of me. And now I'm running a multiple six-figure business. We got a team of 9 guys. I've found this woman that is incredibly attractive that I never thought that I'd be dating. I'm got the best shape of my life. I've interviewed over 400 guys. I've got 3 Amazon best-selling books. And this whole journey has been featured in Forbes and Inc. and Entrepreneur. And I'm not saying this stuff to brag. Why I say that is because I was in a really dark place. I was in a really tough place, and I was lost, and I was alone. And I went on a journey and found some answers. And I believe that every man can do something similar, not exactly like how I did it, but they can go on a journey to create the life that they want.
Now, I have a question, Andrew. So, you know, I've been going through, you know, I've been listening to your shows, and obviously you went on this path. You're trying to kind of find your way and kind of optimize your own life. But two people that you've interviewed stick out in my mind, and they seem to have kind of, they seem to be at opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of their like manly approach. And I'm just wondering which one resonates with you more, and if one of those challenged you more than the other in terms of trying to accept their position. So you had interviewed Brett McKay, who's part of who runs the Art of Manliness.
Right.
And then another gentleman that you had interviewed was Jocko Willink, who's the Marine. Okay. He wrote,
Extreme Ownership.
Extreme Ownership, right. And he has his own Echelon Front, I think is the name of his organization, where he's going around and speaking to people. And it was funny to me that you spoke to both of those guys. And I'm curious, like, it just as a, like a dude, like you look at Jocko's sense is like crush and smash everything. Structure over feeling.
Like, yeah. He looks like G.I. Joe.
He looks like G.I. Joe. He looks like he could walk through a wall. And his whole thing is like, just get after it. No excuses. When you wake up in the morning, you know, it's just total, you know, just total
alpha male
form over feelings. Yeah. And then you had someone like Brett McKay, who has, you know, he comes off maybe, and maybe it's because he's from Oklahoma, maybe more of the suburban dad.
Watch it.
He really preached like more of like adaptability over pure effectiveness. And I'm curious which, because I have a take on which one I feel I could follow more. I'm curious. Those seem to have two different approaches.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will start by saying I've interviewed 400. You named two. And I think that every guy that I interview has something great to offer. And I don't believe that one guy is just the only guy who has all the answers. I'm sure that if Brett was to talk to Jocko, that there's a lot that Jocko could teach Brett in terms of being, you know, a leader and taking action and being able to push forward. And I'm sure that if Brett was to work with Jocko, that Jocko could learn a lot from Brett from being more balanced and having that different approach to life. So in terms of who I resonate with,
and I'm not asking is one better than the other.
Right.
Actually, I'll answer the question. So I just, and then I'll get your take.
That's how it works on this show.
I'm not setting you up.
Yeah, this show is Jones asks questions and then he answers them. And it goes on like for hours like this.
No, that's not
I'm okay with that.
No, but in terms of like the Jocko thing is so rigid. So just, he's just a man of just function. Yeah. They just feel like, I don't know. I think Brett's approach resonates with me a little bit more, where you try to be adaptable and find your groove, where Jocko's just like, fuck the groove, I'm walking through the wall. That's where
Jocko's missing that lover aspect, where it was difficult to get Jocko to be vulnerable. It was difficult to get Jocko to speak his truth in terms of like opening up, to get him to share emotion was very difficult for Jocko. I've listened to a lot of his interviews and it just seems like that's who he is. And that's okay. I mean, that's who he is. And he represents that warrior archetype of man. Like you have your king, which is that, you know, the mission, the path, the purpose. You have your warrior who gets things done. You have the lover, the vulnerability, the loving, the caring, more of that feminine nature of a man that is equally important. But I think that there's things to take from both. And that's what I'm doing on my show, is I'm not saying like there's one type of man you need to be. Okay. What you can do is create the life that you want by listening to other people who have been on a journey. And there are elements inside their story and journey that you can pull from and apply into your own life. And if someone, perhaps you don't resonate with them, then that's maybe a sign. Perhaps maybe two things. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to explore that further, where maybe there's resistance there. Maybe that, like, there's a reason why maybe you don't resonate with Jocko. Maybe there's resistance, or maybe it doesn't work for you.
Well, and see, here's the thing though. I love Jocko Willink. I love the videos. I think I would, it's almost like Steve McQueen. I look at old Steve McQueen films. I'm like, I love that guy because he's a guy I could never be. I would never be cast in the role of Steve McQueen in the same way I would never be Jocko Willink ever. But it's funny that you pointed out getting him to open up and be all about feelings, because I remember one time I was watching he's doing an interview. I want to say he was with a Joe Rogan on Joe Rogan Experience. And he was talking about, you know, even when he's back at home, like the first thing is his team and his Marines. And if he has to go out and bond with them and go out drinking for the night, he just tells his wife, hey, I'm not coming home tonight. I got to bond with my team. And I was like, I've never been married, not close to getting married. But I was like, how the hell does that work? So the idea that you picked up on him, yeah, he's not a feelings guy. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, also for Jocko, I'm sure he found the right woman who understands Jocko. And I'm sure that she's
and that's okay. What he says. Sure.
She's
sure.
Okay with that. But most women, or maybe a lot of women, may not be. But, you know, that's, you know, finding that right woman is extremely important.
Andrew, which of these archetypes, are there only those two archetypes? Have you in your research, or anecdotally even, or if there's empirical studies that have backed this up, like how many types of dudes are there and which one of these types gets laid the most?
You know, it's going to be a combination. So let's start, you know, I spoke about it briefly, but king, warrior, lover, and then there's the magician. Okay. The magician I kind of call like the philosopher, because the philosopher is kind of like the Yoda, like the learning. Man should always be learning. Think of like Socrates, think of Yoda, think of someone who's constantly, learning, growing, a man of wisdom. You have your lover, who that's the feminine, more softer, more art, be able to appreciate beauty, can stop and look at a beautiful scene in nature and appreciate that, can open up, can share emotion. Your warrior, which is to get things done, to build, to create, to do, to fight, to rage war. That's a warrior side. So maybe someone who's like a nice guy would be lacking that that warrior. They're scared. They're scared of conflict. They're scared of confrontation. They're scared to actually put their truth out there. And then the king, which is knowing your path and purpose. So a guy who's like a leaf in the wind, just kind of whatever happens. He's lacking a king. A guy who, you know, will apply for any job that just pays the most. I mean, that he's just kind of going wherever society tells him to go. Like, he doesn't have a clear map of what he wants in his life, and he's not moving towards that. It doesn't matter how big or small, just the fact that you know where you want to go and you know what you want in life, like, that's having a king. And so which one gets laid the most? It's going to be a combination. You don't want to be just one, because if you're a king and you just have this guy, you know people who have a plan, and then they you talk to them 6 months later and they're exactly where they were. They haven't made any progress. And so it's easy to have a king, because it's fun to think about the future. It's fun to think about, you know, your vision for yourself. That's exciting. I love thinking about what I'm going to create in the new year. Like, everyone loves setting New Year's resolutions. That's having that king. But what they're missing is that warrior, the ability to actually get shit done, the ability to actually put points on the board, the ability to wake up and do it, self-discipline, the courage, the resilience, the grit. That's the warrior. And you don't want to be all warrior. Those are guys who are worth a lot of money. Typically, they're very successful. Okay, people who are all warrior and all king, they know where they want to go. It sounds like the perfect combination, right? You have a plan and a mission, and then you know how to get it done. These are very successful entrepreneurs, very successful athletes, even celebrities. They got the king and the warrior dialed. But typically that combination, they're going to suffer by lacking a lover. And these are people who have gone through multiple divorces. These are people who aren't happy and fulfilled, even though they've achieved everything on their bucket list. And that's what a lot of our coaching clients are A players, entrepreneurs, very successful people who have achieved so much in life, but they're not enjoying the journey. They're not enjoying life. And in many ways, they're suffering. I think the philosopher, the magician archetype is where a lot of guys get lost, where, let's say, you read all these books, like you read a lot, you listen to YouTube videos, you listen to podcasts, but you don't actually do anything. You just know a lot. And so I'm sure you know a lot of people who always have an answer. They always know what to do. They always know what to say, but they themselves can't get results. That's someone who has a big philosopher, someone who's, you know, constantly learning and learning. But what they're lacking is perhaps a warrior and a king.
Jones, so which am I? Which am I, Jones?
What is your, what's your favorite book? Like, what book do you find yourself going back to? You just mentioned all the different books that you're reading and information you're trying to take in. What do you keep going back to?
I love books about fear, risk, resistance, and a little bit of death. I know it, you know, it's kind of a dark topic, but the topic of death is interesting to me because when you talk about it and you really look into it and accept that, man, you know, we're all going to pass at some point in our life. And the craziest part about death to me is that you don't know when, and that we're, a lot of us are living like we're going to live until 90 or maybe even further if Elon Musk creates some new thing at his next speaking conference, and maybe we live to 100, right? But, and then we kind of look at our age and say you're 30. So you go, oh, okay, I have 70 years left in this life. But that's not true, because you and I and everyone listening here have known someone who's passed away way before they thought they were going to pass away, passed away in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. They passed away way too young. And so death to me is so interesting because you don't, it's happening to all of us. That's the one thing that we know is happening to all of us. And then we also don't know when it's going to happen. And so it just makes a lot of problems in life irrelevant. And it forces me to focus on what's most important and allows me to enjoy more of the present moment because it's all there is.
Right. Have you ever read, you know, there's a lot of those self-help books or what people typically call self-help, but have you ever read a novel that embraces that? I mean, I can think, for example, I'm thinking of something like along The Alchemist. That seems to be a book that I can go back to again and again and draw stuff from there. But in terms of, you know, what you're talking about, finding your path, that sort of thing, is there ever a novel where you just, it's a book where you can keep going back to, even though it's a work of fiction, you can keep drawing from it?
I'm thinking, and most of the books I read are not fiction, like self-help sort of books or philosophy books. One of my favorite books is The Joy of Living Dangerously. It's by an Indian philosopher, and it's just all about how and why living in danger or uncertainty and taking risk is what brings man to life. And if you think about it, when you're uncertain, you're alive and present, and things are happening in your life. And when you're very certain, you know exactly what's going to happen, typically you're bored. Typically, you know, you're stagnating. But that's my favorite book, is The Joy of Living Dangerously.
Well, since
it's not like I'm out there committing crimes because it sounds like I'm dangerous. It just means it helps me take risk. I mean, I've done a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have been able to do. And just by taking the risk and trying things and learning from mistakes, I've been able to do quite a bit.
So then in your travels, since you brought up an Indian author, are there certain philosophies or areas in the world where you found there's a premium on masculinity and you lean toward their philosophical viewpoint as opposed to, say, the American mindset or the Western mindset? Or is it just dudes are dudes, and you'll find some good dudes, strong dudes in some places and weak dudes in others?
It has to be getting weaker.
What's interesting is that men around the world have the same challenges. So that's what I found interesting. And that was from travel and also just from looking at my clients. I have clients from all over the world, and they can have the same exact problem and challenges in life, but be on opposite areas of the globe and be in different income brackets. And I found that to be incredibly interesting, that someone who, like I just shared, is like all focused in the king and warrior, like, you know, building a business or something in Norway, could have the same exact challenge as a guy in Hawaii if he's just focused solely on building something but neglecting his health, neglecting his family, neglecting his love life, thinking that by building this thing, then I can finally be happy and achieve significance and have the love life that I want. And the guy could be in Hong Kong too, or Japan, or we even have guys in Dubai, and it's the same challenges. And so the guys have the same challenges with women, you know, asking me how to handle these certain types of conflicts with women. And they're in completely different areas and cultures and, you know, continents. And so I find that incredibly interesting.
And now, you know, it's one of those things here. We're having this conversation about, you know, men being men. And there's a part of me that feels like the key to being a man or masculinity would almost, sometimes I feel like I'm walking away from it. Like, it's almost like we shouldn't be talking about this. Do you ever feel like sometimes I'm even trying.
Yeah. Like it's not manly to talk about this stuff, right?
It seems like it's something that we talk men are kind of, it seems like we're softening and getting pushed back more and more now, but it almost seems like something that we're talking about more. Are we talking about it because we're trying to get a handle on things and get back to the forefront? Or is it just, that's just the sign that you ain't a man? Like, I just think like men of my father's era, like they were like punching each other in the balls and drinking whiskey and like,
yeah, men. That's awesome.
Yeah. Like, do you feel it's helpful that we're talking about this, or can it be a step back?
Okay. Good question. I think that, the first, you know, let's talk the history, like men in the past. So in the 60s, 50s, 40s, this kind of thing, we kind of glorify that as maybe the glory days of man, right? As World War II heroes, and just, that's when men were men. They can chop wood, they could hunt, they could fix a car. It was like a man could build a house and do all these things with his hands. And, but that was before a lot of technology existed and computers and things existed where, we have to adapt to where we are today. But I will say that a lot of those men suffered from something called alexithymia, which is basically the inability to express emotion and to connect at a deep level. And so it's one area of life where you're just focused on that manly, like, I'm going to build things, I'm going to hunt, I'm going to chop wood. But many men, they come to me, I'm trying to share from with proof, or maybe a lot of us were raised by dads who struggled to express emotion, and that created distance, and that created a lack of connection between sometimes father and son.
Among women, though, who do you think, what personality do you feel that they gravitate towards? Is it the chopping wood, putting cigarettes out in the top of your kid's head, or is it the sensitive, like emotional? Because it seems like we're all veering towards, you know, becoming more emotional, but I'm trying to get a sense
feminized,
of,
right?
Well, yeah. Or is it, or
it's,
do you find
it's a combination. I would say it's a combination, because I think a man should be able to provide and to build and to create things. He doesn't necessarily need to know how to hunt and do those things.
Oh, thank God.
If you can make good income, that's the equivalent of being able to do a lot of those things in the past, because you're providing. So it'll be a combination of both. Like, a man should be able to communicate and share how he feels. I mean, alexithymia, you can Google it. It's most men, it's like over 80% of men struggle to express their emotion. And what that leads to is a lack of connection with the people that are around them, and specifically their significant other. And when you look at the divorce rates, they're so high, and they're actually going down. But divorce rates are still hovering close in the high 40%. And so, you know, relationships aren't all that great. And when you look at men, the suicide rate for men is 3 times higher than that of women. And depression rates are higher for men than that of women. And I believe that has a lot to do with the inability to express emotion. I interviewed a doctor, a psychologist, and she said that by isolation, like if a man is isolating himself, I'm not talking about putting yourself in a room like you're in prison. I'm just saying, like, you
emotionally
go home, watch Netflix, like you aren't really connected to other people. Like, you're just playing video games. You just kind of, you don't talk to people. It's the equivalent of smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. That's what she said, to your health. Mm-hmm. And just how bad it is for a man to not be connected to other people, not just a man, a human, but women are more geared and naturally able to express themselves emotionally. I'm not saying all women, because I'm sure there are some women who struggle, but in general, it tends to be a male problem. And so the man of the past, I think, have created a lot of problems for the men today with the inability to express, to connect, and to just hold it in, like hold in your emotions. We're not fighting in war. I think Jocko is a good example of a man who might suffer from alexithymia. And
I would say so.
I think that he'd be an example of that, but for good reason. You don't want to be someone who's very emotional on the battlefield with bullets and grenades being thrown at you and people being shot. Like, you don't have time to register that stuff. You need to be able to think and block out those emotions, but we're not in that. Most of us aren't in that environment.
And it's just a mentality that I find I couldn't even relate to. And again, I love listening to the guy talk. I think he's such an interesting dude. But even I've even seen him in interviews where he's like, I wanted combat. Before I got – the first time I was supposed to have gone into combat and then the mission got canceled, I was heartbroken. I wanted to be on the battlefield. And I was like, dude, how – there's got to be like, what, 100 dudes on the planet that would like want to be – I'm sure there's more, but like – what an infinitesimal percentage of men that would see a battlefield now, especially now, you know, with the, you know, the age of the internet and cameras being, you know, on helmets and backpacks and stuff, like who would want to go out there? Yet there are these dudes that like just want to thrust themselves out there.
Yeah. And I'm glad they exist. That's awesome that they exist. And that I think Jocko's a great guy, but yeah, he probably developed that from the military, and it, that's, you know, probably something that he'll have for a very long time.
Absolutely. Well, you know what, you know, when you are going out there and you're talking about, like, what's the one thing that you would say out of any of the writings that you've come up with where you're trying to, you know, get into people's heads, and maybe it's something that you recognize where it's a struggle. Like, there's a message that you keep coming out that you've discovered, you've written down, you've put in book form, put out there, and you're just, it's the biggest struggle for men to accept what you have to say, you know? And conversely, you know, you're in talk about studying masculinity, you know, or studying what men, what was the one thing that you personally even found out that you were doing where it's like, that's the number one thing that I can't do anymore. Like, I've got to stop this.
Okay, cool. So the first one, like, what's the main thing? Cause I do events and I speak, and then I usually wrap up at the end with like, you know, I want you to have this, which is that anyone can change, where no matter where you come from, whatever walk of life you came in, whether you grew up poor, whether you're horrible, you're the worst guy in the world with women, or I meet some guys who are in their 30s and they're virgins, or even 40s, like whatever situation, you can be going through a divorce, you could hate your job, you could be completely broke. But what I have found is that is true after interviewing all these different people is that anyone can change. And it, the moment you switch from being a victim and just accept where you are in your life and that you can move forward, you can create the life that you want. If you want to get in great shape, it can happen. I'm not going to say you can be a billionaire, but could someone make multiple six figures? Could someone get financial freedom? Absolutely. Can someone go from being in a miserable relationship and settling to a relationship that completely rocks their world? It's absolutely possible. I've interviewed too many people to just debunk it who've been in worse off scenarios than most people are. And even myself, having been someone who listens and then applies and then gets results in my own life, I'm not just a messenger. I hope that to my listeners and people who show up to my events that I'm a message where I'm walking proof that anyone can change if you let go of the victim mentality and you just learn from the people who have the results. You're going to fail, but you're going to keep moving forward. You're just going to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And you're going to continue to push forward and just patience. I think people want success. They want change to happen so quick. And I think it has a lot to do with this world we live in where change has to happen in 2 or 3 months or 6 months. And if it doesn't happen, then we'll just give up. And so.
Well, and to go back to the second part of the question, I like to throw out seven questions at a time. And
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's good like that.
No, I'm good at this, clearly. But what's the one thing that you would want where you were like, I've identified this shit's got to stop about yourself?
Guys are going to, you know, it'll challenge a lot of guys, but that vulnerability is courage. And it doesn't mean that every day I'm just out there sharing and being this soft guy, but I think most relationships with women end because, or whatever the guy wants, because of lack of communication. And typically it's a man trying to, it's his ego not allowing him to be vulnerable because he'd rather stay quote unquote strong and be a man from the past. And sharing the truth and open, honest communication and really sharing how you feel in a respectful way with empathy can absolutely skyrocket relationships and prevent them from failing. And sometimes that's all a woman wanted to hear was just what the hell was going on in your mind. Mm-hmm. So that's about the man. Yeah. And that goes for guys in relationships, and that goes for guys who are single. Because often the guy who's single is doing the same thing where he's putting on like a mask of who he is for this woman. And she doesn't really get to experience who that man really is. And therefore, it's weird. It's off. It doesn't feel right. And something's wrong. So she leaves. And then in a relationship, it can go the same way.
Andrew, are you married?
I'm not. I've been in a relationship for 2 years.
Do you have kids?
No kids.
What gives you any credibility at all when it comes to knowing what the modern man goes through? While you were talking, I had to go and I had to fucking talk to my wife about driving one of my kids somewhere. And I'm like, I'm talking. Do you know who I'm talking to? I can't just leave this guy. I can't do it. So I'm wondering, when people call or want to be, they come to an event or they're like, is there a skepticism from guys who are 45 and have a wife and 5 kids or whatever, and they're like, look at you. What gives you the right to tell me these things? I mean, do you find that there to be a skeptical side of the aisle?
Yeah, until they actually just listen and do what I do or try something, and then they see.
You were going to say, you should say, yeah. Do what I say.
Yeah, until they fucking do what I say. They're dumbos.
Do what I say.
Until they try it, then they see the results. And here's what I'll say about that, like the age thing. Because I will say, even on my own team, I'm the youngest guy on my own team. And even when I do an event, I'm usually the youngest guy at my own event.
Plus you're like, you have great genetics or ethnicity or something, because you look like 5 to 10 years younger than you are.
It's so hot in San Diego right now, but
your profuse sweating also lends to a childish hue. But no, you do look young too on top of it. So thank God your balls dropped, or else nobody would believe you.
A scenario real quick about the age, because it's what I share with clients, because I usually have to kill that limiting belief before I do any sort of training. Otherwise, the whole time the guy's thinking, who is this guy?
Right.
And so about the age, like imagine you got you were traveling, you went to Abu Dhabi because you heard you wanted to see the Burj Khalifa. You're really excited. You go there and then you get kidnapped. And then
that would be my luck. Yeah, that would happen to me. Totally.
The one guy who gets kidnapped there, you get kidnapped. And then all of a sudden you're in a foreign country. You're in Somalia, perhaps. And all of a sudden you're in a little cage and you're there for 6 months. And then one day, guys come in, bang, 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 door blasts open, and a guy comes in, lifts off his goggles, and let's just say it's a Navy SEAL, and he looks at you, and he says, hey, U.S. Navy SEAL, let's get out of here. And you look at him, and would you say in that moment, no, hold on a minute, you're 20 years old.
Right.
I'm staying here. Because in that moment, ages, it doesn't matter. This guy can save your life.
Well, let's be honest, though. Yeah, and let's be honest, though. Some 50-year-old guy, there's got to be guys who have a guard up about you and about this message. And I'm sure it helps that you're able to lean on, hey, man, it ain't just me. I am actually the messenger who's delivering the words and the thoughts and ideas of like 300-plus people to you, man. So it's nice to be able to lean on that. But in other words, how do you let people to let their guard down, as you say, be vulnerable? I'd prefer like introspective, transparent, self-accountable, honest, deeply honest. Vulnerable does have kind of a feminine, foo-foo, new agey feel to it from my perspective, but whatever, 6 to 1, half dozen to the other. How do you really immerse people into letting their guard down?
I just do it first. So I'll be vulnerable the whole time at my events. and I'll get guys really thinking, and the guys will connect with me at a very deep level because I'm sharing my story. I'll go into great detail about my breakup. I'll go into great detail about my life and the challenges and how I felt in the moment of my darkest times. And when I am vulnerable first, I think it opens the doors slowly, not everyone, but it slowly opens the doors for other people to be vulnerable by me leading first. And no one in there is thinking that I'm a weak guy. I mean, the whole thing isn't about me being vulnerable the whole time. There's very masculine, there's very warrior type talks that I have. But I do believe that by adding in that vulnerable aspect, that it creates more of a realness to my talks, to my podcasts, to my books, to my events. And guys will get up and share things that they've never shared with their own siblings and brother and father at my events because I had opened the door for them to be vulnerable. Guys that are buff looking bodybuilders, shaved head with tats that are coming in, and I think this guy's going to beat me up if I say something he doesn't like, will grab the mic and start sharing his truth, and he'll start crying. Not bawling.
Really? I was afraid you were going to say that.
And there's not one man in there who thinks that that man is weak.
Yeah, or at least they're not willing to say it out loud. Do you know who Garrett J. White is? Do you know who the founder of Warrior Week is? He's been getting some press recently.
I do. Yeah.
You guys got a beef? Is he an East Coast and you're a West Coast? Here, it's like Biggie and Tupac. No, are you guys the opposite ends?
We're both on the West Coast.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I thought he was on the West Coast, too.
He's in Orange County. I'm in San Diego, which is just he's right above me.
Are you guys buddies?
No, I know who he is. I think I met him. I'm not sure. I think he was supposed to be on my show, and then he canceled. I don't know.
Oh, what an SOB.
There's no if he's helping men and doing good stuff. I mean, I think he cusses too much. I think he doesn't need to get I've seen him speak, and like he brought his family, and he's got, you know, an adorable family. But he's up there cussing and dropping F-bombs. And
right.
I just don't think that cussing is if it doesn't emphasize a point, then I just don't see the value in that. I think
all right.
Overall, I think he's got a great thing going, and more power to him. And I hope he continues to be successful.
Sure.
I don't care if people are in this space. I'm just doing what I want to do because I'm passionate about it.
Right.
I'm having fun doing it. And it really is helping a lot of guys. If guys weren't getting value out of this, I wouldn't be doing it. I get really motivated when almost every day I get emails from people. I mean, people write in, people make videos. I mean, you know, I have my own private community. People are constantly sharing great things about the work that I'm doing. So I'll keep doing it because guys are getting value. And
you're getting multiple hundred thousands of dollars a year or whatever. But it just, you know, the juxtaposition between what you're talking about and your message and your presentation and his warrior branding. And honestly, I watched one of his Facebook Live videos today, and it's intense, man. It's just like, wow, why are you so intense with the tat sleeve and stuff? Now, I still intend to talk to him at some point, but it's definitely a different vantage point you're coming from, and I dig it.
But to your thing about me making money, I should be making money. I mean, if there was a doctor out there who's helping people, shouldn't the doctor get paid for helping people? If someone's got value, I think they have
absolutely
they should be able to make something.
Just tell me, is it 200 grand or is it 500 grand? This is multiple hundreds of thousands. Give me a number.
I don't like to say the exact number. I like to keep it vague and just multiple. Say multiple six figures so that you can let your imagination soar. But
maybe there's a term we could come up with.
To make, you know, I don't have financial goals where I'm like, if I don't make this amount, then I'm a failure.
But let's be honest, that resonates with dudes, right? Doesn't it? Like, because we do. We identify with our job. And yeah.
And guys just guys buy it. I mean, it's cool that people are actually wanting to you know, pay for something that I create.
No question. Maybe it's approaching seven figures. Maybe we could come up with a better branding thing than that. Like, what would Frank Kern do? So are you into like the marketing guys like Frank Kern and other guys out there then?
I've seen them. I've seen them around, and you have to be careful. You have to be careful with who you follow for marketing advice, because just because someone knows how to make money doesn't mean that they're doing it in a way that is good for you and your brand. But yeah, I'm familiar with who these guys are because a lot of that industry is in San Diego for the Frank Kern. A lot of these huge marketers are from here.
So you've written three books, one about how to date, one about how to break up, and one about porn, which I guess is something that happens in the middle of dating and breaking up, probably causes the one book causes the other book. And so the all three, you those need all three.
Those are all just problems I had and questions guys asked me the most when I was starting out. And the dating was, you know, my approach to dating is it's an honest way that I believe a man can go out and authentically meet a woman that would find who he is attractive, and how to navigate that dating process. I mean, so many guys just aren't just taking action, you know, exercising that warrior, meaning they most guys have a list of phone numbers that they could call if I said, hey, I'm having a barbecue. I need you to call three girls. Okay, three girls that you know. Could you do it? Most guys could. Most guys could. They know at least three girls that they could text and say, hey, but most guys just aren't taking action. They're not actually thinking like that and following up and just moving girls up the, you know, talking to girls, getting phone numbers and getting dates, and then being open and honest on your dates so that you're actually presenting your true self. But that's the dating playbook, and it's a great book. The breakup manual is for a guy who's gone through a breakup, not how to break up, but how to recover after a breakup, because I found that when I was going through a breakup, all the books that I read were for women. I searched on Amazon and I found 11 books about breakups. And at the time of when I wrote it, there was not one that was for men. And so everything I was reading was talking about, like, you know, he did this or he did that. And it was almost putting down men in a way. And I'm like, this isn't helping me. I'm feeling bad. I'm wondering if she's thinking this. Is she reading this book? So I wrote a book for men so that they could have something available to recover from a breakup. Because I think breakups are I think a lot of guys just pretend like, oh, it's all right, you know. But inside, he's in a ton of pain, or at least I was.
I was just reading this week actually that the studies show that like women, the pain is intense, but it's actually pretty finite, and the dull pain that men feel goes on for years and years.
Yeah, I have read things like that, and what I found with that was that it's because the woman was dealing with the breakup months or even years before she actually had the courage to initiate it. And so she's started the healing process before the actual encounter, whereas for the man, he starts it post that conversation.
Interesting. Well, whether somebody's single or married, the one book of yours that really caught my eye was the one on porn. Is it possible to use porn in moderation, like it's beer? Is it possible to use it in moderation, or is it a zero-sum binary on-off game of you're either watching and wasting, as you say you did, and I have, and we all have, or many people who are honest have, wasting thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, multiple hundreds of thousands of hours watching porn, or is it something that you could kind of control, but it won't bleed and permeate into other areas of your life and poison, frankly, your psyche and your spirituality and all that?
Yeah. So here's what I'll say is I think the goal of the book, is to significantly reduce or end porn use, and just to make awareness that porn, if used, can become an addiction. And that was the goal of the book, is it's not like like drinking soda or something where it's like, oh yeah, we know it's not that good for you, but it's all right. You know, it's all good. But to understand that doctors are saying that this is worse than the narcotics. And here's a couple reasons why, okay, is because it's free. Okay. What drug is free? It's a free drug. And number two is it's with you at all times. Okay, drug dealers aren't with you at all times. There's barriers to like weed, to cocaine and heroin. There's barriers that prevent people from being able to abuse it. Okay, but porn is the only. It is a drug because it releases dopamine in your body. You get really excited. It's changing your state instantly. Plus, you're also masturbating at the same time. Ejaculation. There's a lot of things happening. And then here's the one that is the hardest one, was just it's endless, meaning you can never watch all the porn in the world. There's always
okay. I was wondering what you're referring to as endless there.
There's always new porn. Okay, there's always a new video. There's always a new girl coming out. So it's just a constant stream of novelty. And novelty combined with these other elements of it being free, it being in your pocket, it creates the perfect environment for addiction. Okay. And so I'm not saying that if you watch it once, you're a loser and that you're never going to be successful, or even if you do it every now and then. I'm just trying to share with guys that, look, if you're doing it consistently, that it is likely to become a problem, not based on what I think, but based on what I discovered in my research of porn. And I think guys should just be aware of that. You should know that. Just like how cigarettes in the 60s, people thought it was cool. But now you know you have an awareness that this will probably give you lung cancer. There's an awareness. And because of that, people are significantly not smoking. So I'm trying to create an awareness. And if a guy's doing it every day, he should probably think about doing it every other day or once a week.
Right.
He should just think about reducing it. And then instead of letting that energy out, you know, with virtual porn, exercise that with a partner.
Okay, right on. So the people that come to you for coaching, is that like something that you're like, all right, step one, you got to stop with the porn, and I want you to replace it with
only if he feels that it's a serious issue. So a guy can tell me he watches porn a lot, and if that's not what he wants to focus on, if he tells me he's more so focused on his business and finding joy while creating his business, and that's where his biggest challenge is, then that's what I'm going to focus on. But if he comes to me and he's been single for a long time and he tells me I watch porn 3 times a day and I think this is a problem, well, then that's what we would focus on.
Hmm. So it can be used in moderation. That is incredibly good news for you, Jones.
It can be. Oh, I love how you put it on me.
Yeah, and this is not bro science, me talking just because I feel like talking about porn. It's because I had a serious issue with porn, and I was using porn multiple times a day, every day, and it was having an effect on my dating life, and it is likely what led to that breakup I talked about several years ago.
So now that you know the dangers of it, when was the last time you watched porn, Andrew?
It's been months, but sometimes
months.
With my girlfriend, we find that it could be fun.
So what? But, so months? That was, and it was with her.
With a girl.
It was with your girlfriend. It was with the person you're in a relationship with.
Right.
Okay.
Is this something you're considering introducing to the missus, Mike?
I think on our honeymoon, I asked, and she was like, oh, we'll watch it when we get back. And let's not watch like it for $14.99 in the Maui Hilton or something. And she was very prudent. She knew where she wanted to send my money even back then. And so then when we got back, she's like, nah, I don't want to watch that shit. I'm like, what happened to all this shit you said on our honeymoon?
It's been never, right?
No, of course never. No way.
Yeah. And I think I back you. I think you're telling the truth.
Of course, there's nothing but the truth here on this show. So it can be used in moderation, but you're not going to. I think that it has to be a binary thing that you shut off. I can't imagine. And this comes from somebody who's a 3-time-a-day user. I'm an abuser, Andrew. But it poisons you, dude.
I know the drill. Yeah, I know.
He knows all the terms, Andrew. he knows BBC to ATM. He's got it all.
I do. The whole gambit. Felching, all of it. So I have to ask you, what is the greatest movie you've ever seen, Andrew? Like, I see Arnold Schwarzenegger behind you in the Conquer poster. At first, I thought it was going to be like Rocky Balboa or somebody. But, like, what's the best movie of all time? What do you recommend I watch tonight?
I think there's a couple, but I love Gladiator. I think that's
up Mike's alley. I think
that's just one of my just all time favorite movies. Gladiator, Braveheart, which is very similar, kind of similar thing, and Band of Brothers.
Yeah, so all like warrior movies. Yeah, right on, dude. Fighting and stuff.
Well, these movies have depth to them. They're not just about the fighting, but yeah, the element of fighting, I think that the hero, I think the bravery, I think the courage, I think there's a lot of virtues in there that speak to me. And I think it resonates with you asking me my favorite book, and I said, The Joy of Living Dangerously. Is this what every man has to like? No, it's just what I like. And I think I wanted to allude to this earlier, that when we were talking about Jocko and stuff, which is that a man can be just as manly if he's a painter. A man can be just as manly if he is a programmer. He's just as manly as the teacher, just as manly as Jocko, a Navy SEAL. And I think we would often think that Jocko is manly, but if someone wakes up and what he wants to do is teach or paint or program, and that's like his path, like that's his mission in life, and he's waking up and he's doing that, that's masculine. That is masculine energy, to wake up, to do what you want to do and to go after it. And so one is more physical while the other is more analytical, but it is still, I don't like when a guy thinks he's not that manly. I get that a lot. When I get guys from Silicon Valley, programmers, software engineers, they think they're not that manly. I think that's more of a societal thing.
Right. So, and I always have this thought, Andrew, like it's not like a masculine thing to want like all these possessions in the world and to, you know, collect all these different rings and watches and cards and cars and country club memberships or what have you. But I do think every man should have like one possession that they treasure and that they know everything about and that they kind of are at an expert level on. Is there anything, what do you have in your life where you go, oh, dude, if you were to come over to my house, I would either show you a car, a wine cellar, or I'm in the process of shopping for, what's the one possession where you would say, this is Andrew?
You're probably looking at it. It's probably that bookshelf.
Okay.
Yeah, you're probably looking at it because that's what people do and that's what I show. I mean, whenever I have new guests over or friends or even when I was dating, like what I show is it's not what I show. It's what people gravitate towards is my bookshelf. And I could talk endlessly about the books. I could talk endlessly about what I've learned and why I think this book is good. And people ask me for advice on like, what book do you think I should read? And I feel I have a good breadth of books I've read that I could recommend really good books to people that they would absolutely enjoy.
Great. Okay.
Andrew, you're a gentleman. You're a manly man. Promote yourself. You can do it better than I can. Tell me about the books, where people can find you, social media, the website, the whole nine.
Yeah, just real simple, knowledgeformen.com. You can go to knowledgeformen.com. You can see the interviews I've done. You can find the books there, and you can find other things that I offer there. But you can check out knowledgeformen.com. But all in all, just go out there and go after what you want. Go after what you want in your life.
Nice and simple.
That's the message.
Well, continued success to you. I hope that we can maybe invite you back, and if you have availability, we'll talk about like a specific, question or something. It'll be a little bit of a shorter thing. But I also hope that Jocko Willink doesn't get a hold of this, because I think he's probably going to kick your ass over what you said about him. What was that? You called him alexithymia?
I said good things about him. I respect him. I think he's great. I've read his books, but I mean, I think he would probably agree that,
I think he would totally agree.
I think he would agree and say, but he's got a great warrior and he gets a lot of shit done. And that's who he is.
What's the word? It's alexithymia or something. What is it called again?
Alexithymia.
Alexithymia. That's what he's suffering from.
The inability to express emotion.
I thought he was just ugly. But now you've diagnosed him with something else. He's churlish. He does seem like a good guy. Yeah. Rock on. Well, Andrew, thanks a ton. We can't thank you enough. We'll be in touch when we package this all together and stuff. We know you got to run. We kept you over by a minute. So thanks for your patience. Okay. And we'll talk to you down the line, buddy.
All right. Nice meeting you guys. Had fun. This was great.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you,
Andrew.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think,
and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike,
version 2.0.
Coming to a phone,
car,
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need it.
Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age.
Giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think.
It's the sh** dudes say
that women want to hear.
Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
Support the show.
Join our community.
Get rewards.
And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Get the show for not much dough. Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Jones, I can't believe that I didn't see one power shot out of McGregor last night. Did you see him, like, launch any bombs?
He had that one uppercut. He had one good shot in the first three or four rounds where he landed a really solid uppercut.
I don't know. I was just expecting more fireworks. It seemed like he was, like, you know, tapping them, like, peppering them.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was always going to be very difficult for him to get off the big shots like he gets off in MMA. I'll be honest with you. I thought he did fine. I was happy with the whole thing. I mean, he looked more competent than I would have thought. The first three rounds I gave to him, the last six I gave to Mayweather.
Although I was reading that two of the judges at ringside only gave McGregor round one.
Yeah, and I don't get that.
That's ridiculous.
I really think he had the first three, but it was definitely Mayweather's fight, even outside of the stoppage. I mean, at that point, it was getting perilously close to, even by my judging, McGregor wasn't going to win that fight.
Yeah, and it was apparent he wasn't going to get that big shot either.
No, and that doesn't surprise me. The better boxers than him have never gotten that big shot. In fact, I can guarantee you there are guys who fought him professionally, and when they saw that one solid uppercut he landed, I guarantee you there were boxers like, man, I didn't even land something that solid on him. So, I don't know. I thought, look, McGregor's done campaigning as a boxer. I wanted him to win, land the big shot, but I didn't think he was going to. And the nice thing about this fight was everyone thought, well, a lot of everyone, most people thought, well, Mayweather's going to stay in the shell and win on points. That was the wildest we ever saw him.
No, he was really, about round four on, he was really pushing forward in a way that I've never seen him push forward. Not that I've been watching tons of fights of his.
And this was a circus fight. This wasn't like the build-up to Mayweather-Pacquiao where two veterans who have earned it are now going to meet. This was a circus. And for a circus fight, it wasn't too bad. McGregor looked more prepared, more polished than I thought he would. And Mayweather got wild. And that was cool to see.
No, totally. Way better than the Pacquiao fight. Mayweather, yeah. I was like, you got to hand it to Mayweather, man. He had to put him away, and he did. And he pressed. He was stalking him down. I loved it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I was not one of those people who was like fine with Mayweather winning on points. I was like, in order for this to really be 50-0, he's got to stop McGregor. He's fighting a guy who never fought before. I know he's 40. I know he hasn't fought in 2 years.
Right.
But you're fighting a guy that never fought professionally before. You have to stop him. And he did. He did. So I was happy with it.
And would you say this is better, as circuses go, better than like Riggs and Billie Jean King?
Like, oh,
in terms of like athleticism, the sports, like it was a good fight.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine. I had no complaints. And look, he landed one big shot. I didn't expect him to land any more than that. I really didn't see McGregor. That translating how you strike in MMA to boxing is so different. And you're going up against a guy who is known to have a turtle shell defense.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he did fine. I thought he did fine. I thought for a large part, McGregor didn't try to box. He tried to make it a fight and keep it a scrap. That's what he should have done. He did as best he could.
Yeah, I wanted to see three things. The biggest one was I wanted to see him get knocked out. I didn't want that stoppage. I think that they had said, do not let McGregor die in here or something. Like, stop it. If you see an opportunity to end the beating, do it. I wanted to see him hit the canvas. I think you needed to see him hit the canvas to put the boxing versus MMA thing aside. And all of the storylines, you needed someone to vanquish the other one more clearly than that.
Yeah, I do think they should have let him fall. At the same point, I don't think the result was going to be any different.
No.
And I do believe Mayweather eventually would have got him.
Yeah, so, but yeah, just make him finish it.
I get it, and I agree with you.
Yeah,
I wish they would have done that. But I don't see McGregor coming back. And like the only thing that I would say critical of McGregor is it appeared to me right after he was stopped, he was telling the ref, I'm dead, I'm dead, I'm dead. It sounded to me like that's what he was saying.
Really?
And he looked fatigued. And he looked flat and fatigued. He looked like he was ready.
Oh, he was getting tagged good and plenty that last two rounds, really.
Right. But then after the fight, he was like, I just get a little wobbly when I'm fatigued. And it's like, well,
Jeez. That's
fighting. Like, that's not, oh, you should let me go. Then I bounce back and I'm good.
Yeah.
When have you ever bounced back from being fatigued? I've never seen.
Well, you know what? Again,
then take a knee. Then take a knee.
Yeah, I called him to win only because when I expected him to lose against Mendez, he beats Mendez. When I expected him to lose against Aldo, he beats Aldo. He seems to have just enough in the gas tank to get it done. And when he was losing against Mendez and then he came out of nowhere and knocked him out, I thought, wow, this guy's got something. So needed to see him hit the canvas and be counted out.
Yeah, no, he still does. And for what was at stake, I will agree with McGregor was saying, he should have let me go to the canvas because there was a lot at stake in this fight. And I do agree with it. I don't think the result would have been any different.
No.
And, you know, if Conor is going to want to go forward, he's saying that fight shouldn't have been stopped. Well, you didn't really protest right after it happened. And then it does appear to me you were saying to the referee, I'm dead, I'm dead, I'm dead. And if you get a little wobbly when you're fatigued, then just take a knee.
There's something in the translation. It means something different in Dublin.
And then when you get to 8 or 9, pop to your feet and then go again. But I have a feeling Mayweather would have been all over you and you would have just gone back down again. But... I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I wanted to see
what I wanted.
Yeah, no doubt.
Was awful. That fight was good.
Yeah, there absolutely were some atrocious. I have no interest in boxing. Canelo and Triple G, I'll watch. But other than that, I don't know what other boxing spectacles do I really want to see.
You could have put on better undercard. You could have put on a better card than that. I mean, you think in the 90s, in the early 2000s. Like when you had those big Roy Jones fights, you had those big Mike Tyson fights, you would have Felix Trinidad, Costa Zoo, you would have Hall of Fame boxers on that card fighting for a title.
So is it just indicative of how far boxing's fallen off?
Well, I don't know. I think everyone gets so obsessed with being this main eventer. Maybe that's where they feel the money is. But like there was a couple of fighters you could have tried to get on this card. You could have tried to, like, someone of a level of like an Amir Khan or Keith Thurman. I mean, there are some names out there where you could have tried to time it out a little bit. So that was a little bit beefier. I mean, that card until you got to McGregor Mayweather, which was a circus fight, was who?
Right.
You know, I mean, even inside boxing guys, I wouldn't have been excited by that card.
Do you think that boxing people were impressed by McGregor hanging in there?
I do. I do. I think they should be. Like, the other thing, too, is he seemed to go in there with, like, a genuine game plan. You know, kept the hands out there, didn't let Mayweather get inside, the pitter-pat jab, whether people disagree with that approach or not. But he did just seem he wasn't just going to be wild, and he did seem to have a method of what he was trying to accomplish. Not let him get comfortable, go forward, pump the jab, and try to land something big.
Yeah,
I mean, that's all he really could have done.
The three things that I wanted was I wanted a knockdown of someone, especially at the end. I wanted to see some bigger power shots from McGregor, even if they were crazy, you know, haymakers, whatever. I wanted to see more big shots from him. And the third thing I wanted to see more of, wait, now what was the third thing I wanted to see more of, Joe's? Knockdowns.
Demi Lovato.
Bigger. Yeah, more Demi Lovato. She is very, very cute.
She stays fit.
Yeah, and there were empty seats in that place, dude.
I know.
How did that happen?
And it was crazy, even among like the super expensive seats. There was like row after row after row of just like nobody there. And I'm thinking to myself, like, if you had that like third or fourth row seat, do you really want to at the last minute be crushing to get inside there? I mean, that's crazy. And it's earlier in the night. I get it. It's only 9 o'clock when that out in Vegas, when that fight's starting. McGregor right. and Mayweather, the main event is right. at 9. But still, you want to be like pushing in at the last minute to get to your seat.
No, yeah, you had to have seat fillers at that place, I think. You can't have any empty seats. Or you digitally fill them in or something. Like, it just looks yeah. embarrassing. The third thing I wanted to see was, I wanted to see, you know, the rabbit punches I didn't dig, although I didn't think they were as egregious as some people in the room that I was at thought they were. He's trying to cheat. He's trying to get away with as much as he can. If he gets, you know, if he gets yeah. them a little bit wobbly from it, but they seem to be on the top of the head, not the back of the head. I didn't think it was that egregious. But I wanted to see more roughing him up, throwing him into the corner, imposing on him, punching him in the shoulder like Dana White said he was going to be punching him in different parts of the body than he's used to. And I just didn't see it.
Well, no, I thought he did a lot of that chopping to the head and stuff. It was funny the where I was at. Where I was viewing the fight, everyone was saying, like, for Conor, keep doing it until, like, it's not clean boxing. I wouldn't accept that out of two true professional boxers. But, like, Conor, he's not going to try to box Floyd. I thought the referee did a terrible job. Until the referee stops you from a boxing foul and you're Conor McGregor, you keep doing it. That's the fight that you're going to, if you're going to win, that's the fight that you're going to win. And on the flip side too, the referee could have easily have stopped Floyd from being like, hey, stop turning your back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And curling
yeah.
up.
Right.
Step back or step to the right or the left, but you cannot turn around and turtle up.
Right. So I'm glad that he didn't deduct a point or something like because Floyd was doing
that. I
thought
he let it get out of hand, but those were boxing fights.
I just didn't even feel like it was that big of a competitive advantage or even a strategic one. Like, it didn't really feel like it was, if it was supposed to be getting in his head and throwing him off his game, I didn't really feel like it was accomplishing much. So I wish he would have been throwing him into the corner, holding him in the corner, and a little bit of more Ivan Drago Rocky stuff.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Floyd was good in the clinch. How many times did you see Conor clinch Floyd and Floyd got his two forearms up under McGregor's chin? Like, once Floyd picked up in the early rounds, okay, Conor's going to look to do a lot of grabbing, which they had to anticipate. You saw Floyd get his two arms up under McGregor's chin, pushing him back. Mm. He wasn't really letting him be leveraged.
So, more importantly than the outcome of this fight, you believe that this was a good thing for MMA, that MMA has the respect of boxing, you know, the Al Bernsteins of the world and Max Kellerman. Was that his name? Max Kellerman. Am I adding a men or is it Max?
You're saying it a little weird. Max Kellerman.
Max Kellerman. I'm putting a weird emphasis on it.
And the wrong syllable. Yeah.
Those people now, they respect MMA dudes more than they did going into the fight.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know that they didn't respect them to begin with. I think that's just from some of the hardcore golden oldies that like hold to that stuff. I mean, I don't think you could come away from that fight and not respect Conor. Well, I mean, he did a decent job.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard like, you know, the Marcus of Queensberry rules or what is it?
I
kept hearing it go, and it's like, okay, they're trying to put some regality and some like they're trying to elevate boxing into something that it doesn't, like it's chess or something. So it does seem like there was a certain snobbery coming out from the boxing community about this. But you got to hand it to him. And as long as you're going to have circuses, why not have like Nate Diaz fight on the undercard? Why not have MMA versus boxing full card?
Because Dana White does not want that. He does not. He didn't really even want this, but this became such a juggernaut. He had to create this fight.
And had to take 20%.
But he doesn't want this. He doesn't want all his guys trying to figure out what boxer they can get so they can get their pay-per-view night.
Right.
This was a one and done.
And he has said as much when he was doing the gauntlet of interviews, like on a red carpet I saw. He was like, I don't want this anymore. It exposes MMA for they don't have as much as he's pushed stand up. He shouldn't.
Well, that's the danger. That's the danger. The more that you do this, you find because they've really tried to veer the UFC into more of stand up fighting because they think everyone wants the knockout. And maybe most people do. But I've said this before the McGregor Mayweather fight. I find it frustrating. I like the way it was 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago.
Right.
And if I'm just going to see two great stand up MMA fighters, I'd rather just see two great boxers or two great Muay Thai fighters, because a great MMA fighter, stand up fighter, is not as good as whatever his best discipline is. The professional of that discipline is so much better.
Totally.
I mean, look at McGregor. He landed, in my estimation, one really good power shot.
Right.
And he's supposed to be, you know,
just a
matrix-y
killer
type striker.
Yeah.
Come at you at any angle and kicks and blah, blah, blah. You limit him to the boxing, to just the hands. You know, that left didn't look so deadly.
No, it totally looks slow and just powerless. But maybe that's more technique than anything. I felt like he was conserving his energy. Like, he knew he was going to gas out. He wanted to prolong it as long as he could. And so his shots were kind of half shots.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could see that.
The mood of the room when he went, like, was it like a few people rooting for Mayweather and most people rooting for McGregor? Where you were at, or what was the split like?
To be honest with you, the split was no real deciding interest, just watching it to watch it.
Really?
And people rooting for Conor McGregor.
Okay. And
honestly, it was me, the hype, and the henchmen rooting for McGregor, and the other half of the room were just watching it to watch it.
And two of you guys with like Irish roots, two of the three, so that kind of makes sense. And the other room, the other half of the room, was just apathetic toward it all. They just were watching it just to watch the bread and circuses.
Yeah.
All right, we had some more definitive, like a couple of people in the place that I was. It was probably about 20 people, maybe, and some women. And they didn't know, and they weren't really all that interested in it. A guy saddles up next to me, and I'd met him before, and he's like, oh, I'm rooting for Mayweather. And I'm like, oh, yeah, why, you know? And he's like, oh, because Conor McGregor called him the N-word.
And I'm like, it drives me nuts.
And I go, no, he didn't. And he's like, yeah, he did, during one of the press conferences. And I'm like, no, he didn't. I'm like, I watched all four press conferences. He never said that. So, like, it kind of the back and forth kind of went on, and I got fucking pissed off, and I'm like, look, in front of everybody, I want you to fucking admit that you're a liar, and you walk into rooms and you just say whatever the fuck you want, and we're all supposed to go along with it. So I want you to admit right now that you're a fucking liar. Like, I got kind of in his face, and I don't want to ruin anyone's party or anything, but like, that's a fucking, especially right now when it feels like America's divided along racial lines, to just walk around spouting whatever you want about that word. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't. You can lie about your job or about fucking a vacation. It's any number of lies, and I'm fucking like, I don't care. I shrug my shoulders and walk away. Maybe laugh at you, whatever. But that lie, I couldn't let go.
So wait, what was the reaction then when you said, I want you to admit you're a liar? Or are you just saying that's what you were thinking?
No. I was pissed off. And people were kind of like, oh, these two, what's that all about? You know, and I felt like the eyes were on me, like I was out of line. And I'm like, no, this guy's fucking saying that I believe there's a racial component. I said it months ago. I think it was white America was rooting for McGregor, black America was rooting for Mayweather. And I told the guy, I'm like, look, I think there's a racial component here. You don't have to insert more of a racial component that there already is than I already believe there is. If you're looking for a rooting interest because one guy's a bad guy and one guy's a good guy, why don't you stick with Mayweather's a wife beater and the other guy isn't, that we know of?
True.
Why isn't that good enough for you?
True.
Yeah. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, he did fucking 90 days in jail.
He's not a wife beater. He's never been married. He beats women.
Oh.
He beats the mother of his children, but he doesn't beat his wives. He doesn't have them.
I'm going to have to issue a retraction. I'll have to go to him and say, yeah, sorry, I didn't realize that I'm the liar.
Yes.
And so,
if you did say that, you were inaccurate.
The danger of dudes like him, and I was like, you know, you just fucking walk into rooms like a fucking douche, same, you know, and I don't even know, I'm drinking, so I don't know exactly what I said, but along these lines, and fairly aggro, and I kind of then had to dial it back. The host was kind of looking at me like, why did I invite you? And I'm like, I don't know, why do you invite guys like this guy? Just saying whatever the fuck he wants, and we're all supposed to hinge our heads and go, yeah, cool, that's not cool, man. Not about something like that.
What did the room see? Here's the thing, though. Now, I'm not in the room, so I don't know how it built to that.
Right.
But how did it get to where you said you're a liar and I want you to admit you're a liar? Like, was the volume of the conversation filling up the room?
It was kind of starting to, yeah, be uncomfortable, even for me. And I wanted to dial it back, but I couldn't let it go because it's like, I don't think you're allowed to have your own truth. In this age of my truth and fake news and all this bullshit, there are certain things that I think you got to call out. You have to call out.
So then what was the next step? Like,
you know, I did dial it back a little bit, and we ended up playing cards. He ended up beating me. That was a little bitter pill for me to swallow, but I took it like a man. So eventually we got past it, but... And especially, I didn't want to ruin my buddy's party completely or any more than I had up to that point. But it just got me thinking, like, dude, there are women sitting here, but they haven't been following it as closely as we have. How many times do people just spout out complete falsehoods? And then everyone goes, oh, I didn't know that. And that's how shit just spreads. And it does. America feels more divided than it really is. You know, Charlottesville was bad. But in the pantheon of bad things that have happened, I don't think it was that bad. It wasn't 9/11 bad. But the media makes it seem like it's a cauldron of hate in America. And I just don't feel like we got so many more things that unite us than divide us that I wasn't going to allow this guy to just fucking spout out some complete bullshit. And so he kind of he tried to flip it into a funny thing where he's like, and I'm like, look, he did call him boy, and that was a bit of a problem. But in Ireland, sorry, that word, he didn't mean it in a fucking racial way. And so this guy turned it into like, well, boy and the N-word are the same. What do you? And he's laughing. And I'm like, they're not the fucking same, dude. They're not the same. No. Like, you're a fucking schmuck is what you are.
No, and that's absolutely. When I was at Lollapalooza and I went up to some beer tent or no, some food tent and I ordered something and they didn't have it ready for me immediately. I stepped to the side and like 2 minutes later, an Irish kid who would have been young enough to be my son comes up to me and goes, all right, here's your blah, blah, blah. All right, you're all set, boy.
Yeah.
And called me a boy, even though I'm old enough to be his son. But I could tell
old enough to be his dad. Yeah.
He's Irish.
Yeah.
And they do. They refer to people as boy or boyo. It's
boyo.
Not this big thing. It's certainly not the N-word.
No, not even close. And then this prick's like, you know, look, the N-word is like, I'm like, dude, the N-word, that's like around the world, the worst word you can say. He's like, no. And I'm like, in Europe, dude, even in Europe, that would be the worst word. He's like, no. There's a word worse. I'm like, which one? He's like, see you next Tuesday, the C word. And I'm like, they say the C word all the time over in Europe, in England and stuff. It's like,
oh, please.
It's like right up there with bloody. And he's like, no. And it turned into this whole thing where I'm like, you're just a fucking schmuck. You're a schmuck.
Yeah, no, he does sound pretty schmuckish. But were people taking your side or his side?
I don't know. I got the feeling that the eyes were on me for, like, you know, it's kind of like a joke where my buddy's like, I already warned the people that you have no filter. And while I like him and a lot, he's actually one of the executive producers of the show at patreon.com/JonesandMikeJones. So while I love him for his support of the show and I love him in general, that I kind of get uncomfortable with that because it's like, really? What am I, some fucking, like, am I on the spectrum or something? Where, like,
I do that, though.
What?
I give warnings about you. Everybody gives warnings about you.
That it's, well, this guy's going to tell you what's on his mind. Be prepared for it. It's kind of, some people aren't prepared for that.
Yeah. I mean, in general, yeah, I think most everyone that you know gives a warning before you come over to new people.
And what's the warning? That he might offend you?
You don't have a filter or boundaries.
I'm crying.
You're not, but... So I get where he's coming from there. Now, the thing, though...
A filter or boundaries. But again, yes. Like, and that's a bad thing, potentially. because it'll hurt people's
bad thing.
It'll hurt people's feelings, or I go too far.
You can go too far. It can hurt someone's feelings. It can go too far.
Mm. Well, maybe I need to take stock, Jones.
Well, I mean, you know, I've never tried to curb or stop you from saying anything in an event.
Don't
unless
gag
I
me.
I knew, like, oh, wait, maybe this person's husband died and you didn't know that. And I'm giving you a warning about something. But
right.
I've never tried to curb your opinions on stuff on this show. I've never been like, dude, the thing about suicide, a little hard. I let you go. I'm not supposed to be your pappy.
Yeah.
You say whatever you want.
Thanks, boyo.
There you go. See, we have an understanding.
I didn't know that it had gotten to such dangerous levels that it had to be, you know, people have to get a warning from me about me before meeting me. That's offensive to me. I thought I was bringing more fun to the party.
You do. No, you bring a ton of fun to the party. But then you'd be the type of person who would see someone's fat wife and go, and she's a ton of fun herself.
Oh, come on. Come on. No, dude, I don't really want to fucking ruin your party unless you are really, somebody is really spouting out bullshit. You're not allowed to have your own truth, Jones. There's one truth.
And that's true. The guy clearly was trying to have his own truth. I will agree with you there.
And don't we all owe it to each other to just be like, no, 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 no. I'm going to hold you accountable.
I absolutely wouldn't have let that stand. I would have totally, the whole N-word thing, whatever controversy, the boy and N-word, I would have totally stood up to that. So
good.
I'm with you on that.
All right. So it wasn't me, you know, because of my disability that I have.
But I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't judge the whole room. What I'm hearing from you on the two opinions that were at odds, I would have been on your side for both.
All right. And you might have even been kind of loud at a party yourself.
I would have stuck in, for sure.
Good. Sure. All right. Thank you for backing me up here, man. I appreciated it. I really do appreciate it. I'm sorry that you've had to warn people about me, but thanks for still inviting me. I guess that's the way I'll have to look at it on the bright side. I still get invited even though I'm a fucking asshole.
Even though you're warning worthy, yes.
I'm
still invitation worthy.
Oh, thanks, Jones.
Ha ha ha!